Hey, it's me, Lars Larson. Thanks for checking out my podcast, and be sure to tell a friend about the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you all over the Pacific Northwest on the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. But I get a special opportunity here because sitting in studio with me is Iraq War veteran Michael Connor Humphreys, but a lot of you may know him a little bit better for something he did some time ago. It was a motion picture, and the older version of that character was, of course, played by somebody else, but the young Forrest Gump was played by Michael Connor Humphreys. Michael, it's good to see you in person.
How's it going, Lars?
It's going very well. Now, I'm sure you probably get tired of talking about your role in that movie all those years ago.
It depends on the circumstances. You know, it's kind of gone away a little bit over the years, but I kind of expect it to, whenever I come to a new place, to, you know, meet new people and have to kind of go through the story again, but that's fine with me. Yes, good way to break the ice most of the time.
Well, I was glad that you reached out to us because you grew up in Mississippi, but you've now moved to the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, I was saying I'm a big fan from our Super Talk station in Mississippi where we got you there, and I've been listening to you for years. And when I came out here, I just thought I couldn't pass up the opportunity to look you up. So,
well, and what brings you from? I mean, I was just in Mississippi, a month ago or so because I went down to do some things in Louisiana.
Right.
And my wife and I like to drive around when we got some time, and so we checked out Louisiana, Mississippi, and we've been down there before. It's a beautiful part of the country. What brings you all this distance to the Northwest?
Well, I'm actually here kind of exploring employment opportunities. I actually finished school in a few months, and I do international relations is what I've been studying. Kind of just going to get that done and see what I can do as far as a career around here, and honestly, just this part of the country is so beautiful. I just wanted to kind of have some new scenery. Mississippi's great in a lot of ways, but, you know, I've been seeing it for years. So
it is a beautiful part of the country.
I wanted to try something different.
No, it's a beautiful part of the country.
It is.
Now, it's a little bit of a culture shock.
It is culture shock, yeah. And I kind of knew that. I've been out here before doing a little work several years ago, so I'm a little familiar with it already. But, yeah, I am coming from the opposite side of the country, and not just geographically, but in every way you could possibly imagine. But, I do enjoy the abundance and variety of culture here. So, you know, I find it cool that you just got a bunch of different ways of thinking and people expressing themselves around here, which is neat. So, but it is. Yeah, it's definitely different.
Well, your notoriety for that movie part that you played that so many people remember. I mean, that was a real cultural. That movie is the entirety of it, peas and carrots.
Yeah.
It's a cultural icon. But then you didn't say, well, now I'm going to be a Hollywood type. I'm just going to go to California. I'm going to seek out movie roles. You said, I'm going to go serve my country.
Yeah. And the thing with that, you know, obviously I was really young when I did the movie, and it was a really big one to be in, to only be in one movie, and that kind of thing does follow you around for your whole life. But I guess as a kid, my parents both, we didn't really at that time want to go spend years in LA trying to get into that industry where we were more comfortable where we were. So I thought I would look at that when I got older, and by the time I was old enough to start looking into that as a career, Iraq had started to happen, Afghanistan. I come from a military family, and I'd always kind of floated the idea of doing the Army. So about the time I was 18, 19, I decided to go ahead and join up. And I thought there wasn't possibly a better time to do it than, you know, while the wars were going on, so I could actually have some service in there.
Thank you for your service to America.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, tell people what you did. You took a tour in Iraq.
Yeah, I was Army, and I was stationed out of Germany, and then I did a tour in Iraq from 2006 to 2007 in Anbar, which, of course, you know, at that time,
dangerous.
Ramadi and everything. Yeah, that was like the big hot spot over there, still is. But, I was there for about a year and a half, and just at the high point of everything at that time. You know, that was that one phase of the war back then. Now they're in another phase. And it's kind of crazy because, like, the town that I was actually based out of, the place that I defended with my life, and I had friends die defending it, and I saw Iraqi soldiers die defending it. I actually watched that town on the news in 2014, 2015 get overrun by ISIL. I don't think they've even taken it back since then. If I'm not mistaken, it's Hit, which is to the west of Ramadi. I believe it's still under the control of the insurgency over there. So, I mean, it's hard to have been there and met the Iraqis in that town and actually have gotten to, you know, have personal relations with people and then know what's probably going on to them now. And you can't really put that stuff down when you come back, even years later.
What's your personal reaction to the idea that you did do that service? You put your life in harm's way to do that and accomplish all that was accomplished. I mean, in 2011, even President Obama, who I was not a fan of, said, this is a success story. We have a self-governing country.
Right.
And then we pulled all the troops out and it all went back into a mess.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's two different sides to it. It's that the whole question of whether we should have been there to begin with is one thing, and that to me is kind of invalid at this point, because now that we're there, regardless of whether or not we should have been, you know, you got to have the right strategy. You can't pull everybody out in a situation like that. It's going to get unstable. It's like that everywhere in the Middle East, but they really probably should have kept more people in there for the time being. But I do understand the political dynamics. You know, the American population, for the most part, wanted out, but most people are not that well informed about what's going on to begin with, you know, to make those kinds of decisions. So, yeah, there's a lot of political motivation that went on that got us out of there, and it's just kind of going the same way as it did in Vietnam or Afghanistan after the Russians or any of these other places. It takes so much time and investment to bring a place to a point of stability. And compromise too, but you don't have a lot of that, especially when you get into foreign policy and stuff, military policy. It's people are pretty hard line about which way they're going to go with it. So
I'm talking to Michael Connor Humphreys, who you might remember from Forrest Gump, who played the young Forrest Gump. So what was your MOS when you were there?
Infantry. Yeah. Yeah. I was only in there for about 3 to 4 years, the minimum stint. I figured if you're going to be in the military, you might as well do like the hardest job there is or the most basic job. So be on the front lines. But yeah, I hesitate to say I enjoyed it, because there's a lot of things that are not enjoyable, but it was probably the funnest thing I've ever done. And really, having done movies is great and all, but I really consider having been in the military the most significant thing I've ever done overall, you know, that's had the biggest impact. But
it won't surprise you to hear that almost all the veterans I talk to do say they liked being in the military. They did describe it as fun, no matter which conflict they were in the middle of.
Yeah, it's true. And I'm glad to be pursuing what I'm pursuing now, but I do regret every day not being in there anymore. And it's just, you know, the camaraderie and the professionalism. There's a number of things that draw me to it, but you know, I almost made career out of it, but there's a couple other things I want to try out too.
Okay, so let me ask you this. When you go into the military and then I know you do basic, then you do your MOS training, then you get assigned to where you're going.
Right.
When you show up, do you let people just figure out who Michael Connor Humphreys is? Or do you figure it's better just to say, by the way, I had this thing in my past, or what?
My approach to that, generally speaking, I have avoided attention most of my life with that thing. That's just been my rule. And I knew when I was going in the Army that would be there would be a trick to avoiding that. So I just didn't say anything. I was about 3 weeks into basic training, and one of the drill sergeants figured it out eventually. And the kicker is that there was this one kid in there for the first 3 weeks who kept coming up to me, and he's like, you know, you look just like that kid that was in Forrest Gump. And I kept telling him, I was like, oh, I get that all the time, man. I was like, you know, I just happen to look like him. That's not me, though. And then he never believed a word I said after that once he actually found out. So, and then he thought I was an elf in the Lord of the Rings or something. I couldn't convince him otherwise. So,
did the drill sergeant go to IMDb or something and look up your name?
You know, I'm not sure how they picked it up. I think somebody just put two and two together with my face, or maybe there was somebody there that, like, you know, passed the word around. But, once it got out, you know, it made basic training interesting. They're already hard on you anyway, so it didn't make it any tougher. But the rest of the time I was in the military, you know, I had my nickname assigned to me automatically.
What was your?
Just Gump.
Gump?
You know, yeah. And they already call people Gump anyway, so. But,
So you didn't have any DIs telling you, run, Michael, run.
No, you know, they were actually pretty good about it. The thing is, they already yell run, Forrest, run at people anyways. I mean, it's such a big, you know, iconic joke that always made me look over my shoulder whenever I heard that, thinking, oh, they had figured me out. But they were just yelling that at people to begin with. So, they were fair about it. You know, like I said, they were no tougher than they already were going to be. And nobody else in the military was either. But generally, I got a lot of respect from people for it, which was cool. I think it was a benefit overall to put those two things together. I think I've probably, any attention I've ever been able to bring to the military through that, I thought was helpful, and that's what I would like to do with it, you know, help out veteran situations in any way I can. So,
Michael, do you mind sticking around for a few minutes?
Oh, absolutely.
Michael Connor Humphreys is with me. You're listening to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you, and glad to get your phone calls and your emails. Michael Connor Humphreys has joined me in studio, a young man who grew up in Mississippi, The pride of Independence, Mississippi. So a great town to be from, huh?
Yeah, it's actually, yeah, Independence is where I grew up. I was born in Memphis. And,
okay.
Yeah, but all small town North Mississippi originally. And that's where, you know, most of my home life over the years has been around that area. But I've lived all over, worked all over. So I've had a lot of experience outside of Mississippi. And that's kind of what brings me to places like this.
The young Forrest Gump. And you've been in some indie movies since then, or one?
Yeah, generally speaking, there's Forrest Gump, of course, is the big one. And then I've done a bunch of smaller work here and there over the years, music videos, commercials and stuff like that. Like I was saying, I didn't take it that seriously as a kid. It's hard to get a kid to take that stuff seriously. So, I had a independent film, World War II film, that I actually shot out here in Portland a few years ago, Pathfinders. And so I've been out here off and on working on that, or had been at one time. And that was a good experience. I got some directing experience with that, production experience. I was kind of
directing.
It was on the creative end of that one. So I did play a role in it as well, but, you know, which was easy for me playing a soldier, obviously. They let me get a little bit of directing experience out of that. And then I've done some Broadway style shows, DC, LA, with some bigger names. If All the Sky Were Paper, that was a show where we actually read war letters. This Andrew Carroll, this military historian, went around the world and collected war letters from basically every army and every war that's ever happened, and got these letters and then wrote all these sketch pieces around the letters, like a guy trapped in a ship at Pearl Harbor, or this Russian soldier fighting Germans, or something like that. And we did a show at the Kennedy Center, did a show at the Kirk Douglas in L.A. So, and a lot of this stuff, it's funny because I haven't really pursued it so much as people just kind of hunt me down out of the blue a lot of the time when I'm not expecting it to do things like this, which is great. So I've always figured if I were to actually put a little more effort into it myself, you know, I could probably get somewhere with it. But I know Portland's a good area to kind of look into that stuff. I know they have a really good theater scene around here.
Now, what do you want to do? You want to do something creative?
Yeah, I do. And it's my passions go two radically different directions. Acting is something, and movie making I obviously fell into as a kid, and I do really enjoy it, and have a lot of creative drive with that. Would like to pursue it a bit on the other side of it, like with the military and whatnot. I'm also extremely passionate and knowledgeable with foreign affairs, international relations, military history. I waste a lot of time reading about history and geopolitics, you know, when I should be doing something else. And that's a strange thing to waste your time doing. There's some way to, you know, turn that into something productive, of course, if, you know, you go down the right avenues with it. And that's what I study in school, too, is international relations. So that's a very different direction than film. But once I finish up with that, I'm going to see what I can do as a career with that, and wholeheartedly pursue anything in the entertainment industry simultaneously.
So, Mike, where are you finishing up your schooling?
I'm online, American Military University. It's through the Army originally. Yeah, it's where one of the places where a lot of people that are active duty that want to go to school have to go online. Generally, you don't really have brick and mortar schools you can go to when you're getting restationed.
And you don't need it either.
No, you don't. And, you know, everything nowadays, you can pretty much do anything online, anything and everything. I would wager to say that, you know, in probably a decade, you're going to have more people in online schools than you'll have at brick and mortars, just because it's more convenient for a lot of folks. But also feel a little trepidation, too, about the fact that the entire world's slipping into the internet. But, you know, that's just the way technology goes. I don't know if you can do anything about it.
I've got a brand new grandbaby at home, and one of the scariest things for me is that every time a screen, a phone screen or a pad screen, gets anywhere, if she sees it, she gravitates
wants to
it. And
like
she's 15. At about 6 months, she'd start grabbing for any screen. And I thought, it's a really nice device. It's a great tool,
right?
But it's a little frightening to be that sort of obsessed with it.
And I went in to help at a kindergarten not too long ago back in Mississippi, volunteer work, and all the 5-year-old kids have iPads, every one of them. And it was blowing my mind, because that's not what it was like, obviously, when I was there, you know, 20 something years ago. And I'm not even technologically adept to use these things like these 5-year-olds are. I'm just old enough that, like, the social media, internet, Facebook, YouTube, all that stuff started hitting when I was in my early 20s, and I was just old enough that I would participate in it, but also didn't care that much. So now I find myself kind of like out of touch with that stuff a little bit more so than I probably should be. But I'm slowly working my way back into it. Yes.
Well, Michael, for those people listening, and for people who hear this interview, we have a lot of podcasters who listen and will hear it later. If they email me, talk@LarsLarson.com, What would you like to get? What would be your ideal job? Because I'll throw the hook out there and see if we can find something.
Here in the long short term, finishing up school, like I said, I got the international relations degree. Anything involving international business and sales in general. I've always wanted to work in the defense industry. There's a couple
there
of those things. Lockheed Martin's up here, right? Yeah. Right, guys like that. You know, military experience probably falls into that. And then this one, it's a little ironic, but yeah, I guess this is where life imitates art. But you got the whole Forrest Gump Nike running shoes and all that that he wears in there, and the whole running thing that he does. I never intended to work at a shoe store, but I actually spent the past couple of years while I was working on school, working at a shoe store in the athletics department.
You did.
Got to know everything there is to possibly know about running shoes. And of course, people are coming in there knowing who I am too. So it all just kind of falls together.
Maybe you should hit the people up at Nike.
It's one of the things I thought about, but I've become kind of a unintentional expert on athletic gear and, you know, and fitness and all that kind of stuff, hiking, running. So, but pretty in touch with the running shoe industry these days.
Well, I'll tell you what. Well, I will pass along any emails that come to me with people offering things up to you, because it's great that you've come here to the Northwest. And I kind of like the fact that I meet some people, and I tend to be kind of, you know, in my industry, and I'm kind of focused on that. But I'm 58 years old.
Yeah.
I like the fact that you see the diversity of things. You're saying, well, I can be in the military, I can be in the movies, I can do an indie film, I can be a director, I can maybe be a Foreign Service officer, or maybe someday an ambassador, or I could work for a shoe company.
Having a little bit of experience in everything, I've always put a premium on that, you know, and maybe that's kind of bounced around a lot over the years, but I feel like I've gotten to do a lot in my 32 years that a lot of people probably don't get to do in their whole lives, so...
And you're going to climb Mount St. Helens at some point.
Yeah, I'll get to that here soon, yeah.
Listen, you should do it while you're your age, because that was my experience. Was it's a little physically, it's not as bad as climbing Mount Hood.
Yeah.
And certainly not as bad as Mount Rainier. Mount Rainier is a tough task.
So many volcanoes around here.
Lots of volcanoes.
How often do they get evacuated? I don't guess that's something that actually goes down that often.
No.
I haven't heard about it on the news any time in my lifetime. So.
Although Mount Rainier... The big one you can occasionally see from Portland.
Yeah.
It is a beautiful mountain, but they say that about 500 years ago, a big slab of it slid off into the Ording Valley and pushed out the edge of Puget Sound, where Tacoma is now. And I asked the geologist, how often does that happen? He said, about every 500 years. So
rolls around every half millennium.
You may want to go after it while you can.
Right.
Michael, do you have a website or a Facebook or anything you want to share?
Yeah, I've got an email address. It's michaelconnorhumphreys@gmail.com.
Very good.
Yep.
And then there's probably a private one so you can screen out of.
Have a couple of different windows for that.
Michael, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much.
You as well, Lars.
And thanks for your service to America. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on First Amendment Friday. Glad to be with you. And we just had to take that opportunity to meet the young Forrest Gump and to see where he's going today. And don't you like the fact that you find a millennial who's able to do a whole bunch of different things and doesn't have to be focused in just one area, but has a real work ethic and wants to get some things done. To your calls now on this First Amendment Friday at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Let's go to Nancy in Idaho. Hey, Nancy, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, Lars.
You bet. What's on your mind, ma'am?
Well, I'm calling because in a previous life, I was a conservative environmentalist, and that was before environmentalists became a pejorative. But I worked in the environmental field, and one of the things that was drummed into us was when you're making energy or dollar investments, you always consider the first cost as well as operating costs.
Yeah.
Well, I happen to own a Volkswagen Jetta, the 2.0 liter, that is being recalled under the court and EPA mandate.
Yep.
And I just found out they're going to crush all of those cars that they buy back. And that's all the 2 liters and probably the 3 liters between 2009 and 2015.
Wow.
And that horrifies me from an environmental perspective, that all of that energy was put into the production of these vehicles. My Jetta gets over 40 miles to the gallon.
And here's the thing. Why do you suppose the company didn't decide to simply change the hard programming in the chip? I mean, either by changing the chip out altogether, because we understand what happened, that the company decided to cheat the system a bit. But it sounds as though a lot of the car companies have cheated the system a little bit. And I guess, Nancy, part of my reaction to that is if major companies making cars are being told a dual message by the governments of the world, one, get as high a mileage as you can, two, get as low a pollution as you can. And the engineers can tell you those are pretty much mutually exclusive. You know, in other words, more the higher the mileage you get, you're going to compromise on pollution. And if you go in and put in really tough pollution controls, then you're going to compromise mileage. So when you tell the engineers, find a way to get both, and they end up cheating, it may suggest that some of the limitations are entirely too tight.
Yeah, I agree with that. And they have an option for accepting a modification on the engine as opposed to the buyback, but they don't have an approved modification. And this is years in the making. And like you said, in the time being, I looked for a diesel replacement for my Jetta that I'm going to give up. And nobody can make diesels. Jeep, which was one of the ones that made a good eco diesel, hasn't been able to sell any new diesel vehicles. And a lot of the others, I believe Volvo, and I think they're going to hybrid vehicles rather than doing
Volvo is going to go to entirely hybrid vehicles.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny about that? Not to get too far into the weeds, because I'm not big enough of a car. I don't study it enough to know that much. But I remember reading just 2 years ago that Volvo had decided to go to a four-cylinder engine for all models. And you think, well, how are they going to replace an eight-cylinder with a four? They were going to do both a supercharger and a turbocharger. And it was really a fantastic piece of equipment. So imagine putting all that time and effort into that and then having a company change course and say, nope, we're going to all hybrids. Well, you know the downside on the hybrids. A lot of the hybrids, you know, after you calculate in the environmental cost of creating the batteries and the charging and everything else, that they really aren't that much better, if better at all, than a really refined gasoline model.
Yeah, I'd like to know what the economic life is on one of those battery jobs, because I can't help but think we're getting a lot of batteries in the landfills from those cars.
Well, not only that, but think about the process on the other end of it, depending whether it's nickel metal hydride or lithium ion. The stuff they have to dig out of the ground to be able to make that battery has an environmental cost as well. And I just think that if you could really design well-run engines, both diesel and gas. The other thing I wanted to mention to you about the diesels, Europe went in the direction of diesels. And America said, no, we're not going to do diesel. So there's a great Jeep Liberty that was made with a diesel engine. And I remember calling a car dealer friend of mine, and I said, can I get one of those? And he said, nope, they made 13,000 that they sold in the United States, and now they don't sell them in the United States anymore. And I said, oh, so they stopped making them. And he said, no, they make them in Ohio. They make them in Columbus, Ohio. I said, well, hold on. If they make them in Columbus, Ohio, where do they sell them? He said, Europe. And I said, so we're making an American-made car that can't be sold in America, but can easily be sold in environmentally sensitive Europe? What's up with that? And the answer was, America decided some time ago, not the marketplace, but the government, we hate diesel and we like gasoline better. And so a really efficient car engine in a really efficient size vehicle can't be sold in America. And it's sad, because with the government driving the marketplace and making the decisions instead of the marketplace driving the marketplace, Americans lose out.
Very much so. I wanted to know, let everybody know that they're going to crush all these vehicles, and it's a tremendous waste in both economic investment and environmental costs. It's a tragedy.
You're right. Nancy, thank you so much. I appreciate the call on this First Amendment Friday. Let's go to Patrick. Hey, Patrick, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, I don't know how you do it, Lars. I got to be honest with you.
What?
Idiots. Just idiots. No nonsense. Stupid. They don't have any fact. They argue about nothing. Just idiots.
Well, it's entertaining for me, but you're right. It's sad. Like the gentleman and the lady who called in and who was saying that, and no disrespect to the lady, but when she says, well, he pulled us out of the climate Paris Agreement. And I thought, do you know what they're doing in that? That it lets China continue to increase its pollution by as much as 70% out into the 2030s, while America is supposed to constrain its economy and go the opposite direction so that we can let the Chinese pollute more? And she didn't realize that today the biggest emitter of CO2, if that's what floats your boat, is China. It emits twice the CO2 that the United States does, and yet they've bought the the nonsense pumped out by CNN, you know, the kings of fake news at CNN, that America is this filthy, dirty country that pollutes everything, and the rest of the world is so, you know, clean and green and all that. In fact, America is a very efficient country, far more so than China is.
Well, and you know what? This is the thing that really gets me. I'm sure all these are in-debt, college-educated people that are in debt for $50,000, $60,000, can't afford but a barista job. And here I am, a working guy, Democrat, but of course I vote the man, not the ticket. And hey, I'm making it just fine. I don't complain. I don't tell about how I need to hug trees and hand out for here and there. So it just aggravates me. I don't even, you know, I just can't stand Kool-Aid drinkers.
Well, Patrick, the thing that drives me nuts is, and I think we're going to end up bailing out the college generation on their loans, a lot of them. And here's what's sad about it. Anybody who got a practical education, and by that I mean if you became a doctor, a nurse, even a CNA at the community college level, if you got an engineering degree or you got some degree where you actually can do something with it, they don't have any problem paying off their loans. The ones who can't pay off their loans are primarily those who went out and got the oddball studies degrees. You know, the ones that end in the word studies. What's that?
Yeah. Political science, basket weaving, help save community organizer. I mean, geez, you just can't give these jobs away unless it's a government grant. And I mean, come on.
Well, imagine the irony, if not the irony, the crime of saying to a young man or woman, you got a nursing degree. It cost you $50,000, and the first year out of school, you made $50,000 a year. You had no problem. You're going to pay off your loans, but you're also going to pay off the loans for the person who got the degree in general studies or got the degree in art appreciation or, what you know, art history, and you can't find a job other than barista. So the young man or woman who took the practical route and got a real degree in something that really can earn a living and pay back the loans is going to pay double for the young man or woman who decided to waste 4 years or 5 years and a lot of mom and dad's money. You're going to bail them out on their school loans? That is practically criminal. Back in just a moment. It's First Amendment Friday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on First Amendment Friday. Glad to be with you and glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. I got this email from Donna who says, Lars, I heard this morning on the local talk show in Medford, that would be Bill Maher's talk show, that two Republicans who are saying they won't vote for the current health care version, they're doing so because they want changes that are specific to their home states. Why is that aspect of what's holding back progress not being reported? I wanted to provide their names, but got nothing but circular referencing. I'll tell you what, there are a bunch of rhino Republicans out there who aren't getting with the program, and they're essentially spitting in the face of voters. Let's go to Charlie in Prosser, Washington. Hey, Charlie, thanks for listening. What's on your mind?
Hey, you've got a bunch of idiots calling in today. This is Idiot Friday?
It's First Idiot Friday. Yeah. No, I love naysayers because they help to illustrate the point. And sometimes there are naysayers who will ask me about things that I never would have thought to mention, you know, like the fact that you have to explain what the Paris Climate Agreement is and what it is not. And so when they run around and talk to their friends, their liberal friends, and they say, but Trump pulled us out of the Paris Agreement, and everybody kind of nods their head sagely and says, boy, and the Paris Agreement was so good for America. It was so good for the world, and they don't know what's in it.
You got a point. That's, I guess, a real good reason to have them people call.
Well, it is a good reason because then we can tell people what the real answers are. Let's go to Bob, who's in Agate Desert. Where are you, Bob? Where's Agate Desert? I'm not familiar.
Lars, the Agate Desert is on old land maps. It is between White City and Medford.
Oh, okay.
I like to refer to it as the Agate Desert because I've harvested probably about 200 pounds of them out of my yard over the years.
Did you bring them home or what, to sell them?
Oh, yeah, I've got some beautiful agates. They're almost as big as hardballs.
Wow.
The reason I'm calling, first wanted to make a quick comment on that crushing of the Jettas.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many explicatives I'd like to send to the German engineers for not coming up with a more intelligent, simpler, and economical solution than crushing all those cars. That's insane.
Well, yeah, it probably is. But I guess if you think about it, and again, I'm not an automotive computer engineer, but if Volkswagen said, what's the cost of re-engineering all the software, then creating a special chip where we're only going to make a few, you know, tens of thousands of them so you don't get the economies of scale, then we have to get the chips out to the people and insist that they be installed in the car, and all it does is degrade the car's performance. Volkswagen may have looked at it, and this is how a sensible conservative would look at it. They'd say, it's going to cost us $100 million to do the chips, or it's going to cost us $25 million to crush the cars. Which one do you think they do?
It's just such an environmental waste. But the reason I called is because I had just started running my errands when you were doing your opening, and you were talking about the sea lions and the salmon, et cetera.
Yeah.
And we've got two perfect solutions here. What do polar bears love to eat? What's their primary source of food? And what are they having trouble getting right now?
Sea lions.
Seals.
Seals and sea lions.
What we ought to be doing is netting those seals out of the Columbia in the local area, hauling them up to the Antarctic.
And feeding them.
And letting
them.
The polar bears feed.
Eat them.
Yeah, now, we can cure two problems with one motion.
I thought you were going to suggest that we bring polar bears down to hunt the shores of the Columbia River.
No. Too warm for them.
Well, too warm, and they're a little bit of a detriment to the tourist trade, too.
You know, the government likes wasting money, and I was a loadmaster in the Air Force on 141s and C-5s after I got out of the Army. And, we waste money all the time sending aircraft out on animal rescue missions, so let's start loading up some 130s with 250, 500 seals a month and start delivering them up to the Arctic Circle.
You know, that, and what would you do? You'd come in with a big C-141 and put the ramp down on the back?
No, a 130, not a 141, 130.
And put the ramp down on the back and have a couple of guys on with gunner's belts on, and they would be shoving these sea lions out the back of the C-130.
Well, they call that LAPES. I can't remember the full acronym, but it was low altitude something extraction.
Yeah.
Oh, parachute extraction.
Yeah.
And that's where they basically come in real low with the aircraft, and a parachute goes out the back, and it sucks all the pallets right out of the cargo bay onto the ramp. So we could do that with seals.
And drop them to all the hungry polar bears that Al Gore is so worried about.
Yeah. We could cure two problems very easily.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. Bob, thank you very much from the Agate Desert. Dave's on from Polsbo. Dave, thanks for listening on KVI. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. The woman that called in about the Volkswagens, I tell you, that was right there in my wheelhouse. It's my pet peeve. I am a co-founder of a company up here in the Seattle, Washington area, and we developed a water-cooled catalytic converter that has beat everything on the market performance-wise. We went to General Motors. They said, well, it looks interesting, but here, spend $500,000 and then convince us. We've gone to so many corporations and told them what we had. I even wrote a letter to the technical director for Volkswagen. He's in California. I got no response. I told him we could fix this problem. And it is possible to get better fuel mileage and more horsepower, and that's one of the virtues of this converter.
I'll tell you what, send me an email, and I want to check that out. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show on the Radio Northwest Network.